There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Uh-huh.
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at grassroots and independent media and a critical examination of our media environment. I'm your host, Paul Riesmanil. At the controls is producer Drew Tirico. On today's program, Radio Revolt, Micro Broadcasting, and Art. And we'll take a look at how the election will impact our media environment. All that on today's Media Geek. Do stay tuned. First, we'll take a look at our media news headlines, picking out stories of our communication environment that typically don't get covered in the electronic news or otherwise get covered as business stories rather than democracy stories in our print press. Less than a month after being shut down by the FCC and federal marshals, Free Radio Santa Cruz can be heard again on the California airwaves. The station resumed broadcasting on the internet shortly after the raid, but did not restart the radio broadcast. Instead, an independent group calling itself Santa Cruz Radio Access Movement, or SCRAM, has started broadcasting on Free Radio Santa Cruz's old frequency, 101.1 FM, using the station's internet feed. Because the groups are not otherwise connected, this should shelter the Free Radio Santa Cruz volunteers from further FCC action and will force the FCC to start its enforcement efforts all over again.
On November 1st, the media reform group Free Press filed a petition with the FCC seeking to deny the renewal of Sinclair Broadcast Group's television licenses in the states North and South Carolina. Also challenged are two licenses held by Cunningham Broadcasting. Free Press alleges that Sinclair, working in concert with Cunningham Broadcasting, is operating illegal duopolies in Asheville and in Charleston. Free Press claims that Sinclair actually operates two or more commonly owned and controlled television stations in both these markets. Two of the stations are officially owned by Cunningham Broadcasting, but Free Press says that Cunningham has relinquished complete economic and editorial control of its stations to Sinclair. Free Press also charges that Sinclair ignores its obligations to provide programming that serves the interest of local communities, since the company fired local news staffs and consolidated news operations into its headquarters in Baltimore, Maryland, under the name News Central. Free Press lastly alleges that Sinclair's owners lack what the FCC calls quote, character qualifications, unquote, to be television broadcast licensees, because the company has ignored prior FCC orders to separate Cunningham and Sinclair operations. Sinclair garnered national attention recently for its plans to air an anti-John Kerry documentary during primetime on all of its stations nationwide, a plan that the company changed at the last minute, instead airing a one-hour program called A POW Story that included portions of the anti-Kerry film. Sinclair owns 62 stations, including ones in Champaign, Springfield, and Peoria, Illinois, and Sacramento, California. Sinclair released its third quarter financial results on November 4th, showing 6.2% loss in operating income compared to last year. But the company also saw a $6.7 million boost in political ad revenue from the same period last year.
The FCC is currently studying the issue of localism and broadcast stations, investigating whether broadcasters are meeting their public interest obligations, especially with regard to local programming. Comments on this proceeding were due on November 1st, and media reform groups, the National Association of Broadcasters, local broadcasters, and members of the public have recently made filings. A coalition of media reform groups, led by the Brennan Center for Justice at the NYU School of Law and the Sumer Federation of America, urged the agency to take a stand against corporate conglomerates that ignore local community needs while profiting from what it calls advertiser-driven, lowest common denominator programming. The comments recommended reforms including assigning more broadcast licenses to nonprofit community media and developing regulations to ensure that commercial broadcasters provide local groups and media producers with access to broadcast time and facilities. The Illini Media Company, which operates WPGU-FM in Champaign, filed comments in support of the localism proceeding, detailing the station's recent changes to emphasize local music on air and to air more locally tailored and produce entertainment and public affairs programs. Alan Beck, Vice President and General Manager of Saga Communications, Champaign-based radio group, also filed comments detailing its four stations' local efforts, writing, quote, "Our country station, WIXY, actually records hundreds of grade school classes reciting the Pledge of Allegiance and replace individual classes doing so at designated times daily," end quote. Beck's comments go on to note that, quote, "And yes, Mr. Chairman, we do live in one nation under God, because that is what we are, and that reflects the values of the communities which we serve," end quote. And all that emphasis was in stark capital letters, and they are original to the filing itself. In its comments, the National Association of Broadcasters argued that broadcasters face intense competitive pressure that drives radio and TV stations to meet the needs of their communities. The nation's largest broadcast lobby wrote, quote, "Given these circumstances, NAB believes that the FCC's inquiry imposing new obligations on broadcasters is neither justified nor prudent," end quote. Finally, 23 members of the public in Moscow, Idaho, and 119 people in Champaign-Urbana filed individual comments. Almost all of them were critical of broadcasters and the level of local service they provide. A majority of them directly addressed Sinclair Broadcasting and its plan to air the anti-John Kerry documentary. Replies to comments already filed may be submitted to the FCC until December 1st. They may be filed at the FCC website. Go to www.fcc.gov/localism.
And the Motion Picture Association of America, or MPAA, has announced its plans to sue individuals for sharing movies over the internet. This action mirrors what has been brewing in the Recording Industry Association of America, or RIAA, for the past few years. The film industry's lobbying arm has declared that it will pursue fines up to $30,000 per file shared to prevent theft. From personal experience at my job with the university computer lab, I can say that the industry has obviously been ratcheting up in its intimidation against file swappers by sending official emails to various departments about users' attempts to share files. All these emails have concerned users running a software called BitTorrent, similar to the old Wave Napster, except for video files. Representatives at the MPAA are justifying this campaign on long-term ethical grounds. Quote, "If we don't act now, this behavior would become more and more common in American life," end quote, says president of the MPAA, Dan Glickman. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Incorporated Chief Executive Alex among the strongest studio advocates for the suits, has a similar sentiment. Quote, "I think it's beyond stealing. It's dangerous to teach an entire generation of American kids that stealing physical property is not okay, but stealing intellectual property is okay," end quote. Industry lobbyists have also made it clear that they intend to make the market more accessible to internet users in order to discourage file sharing. Legal alternatives are in the works, which compare to with the various 99-cent MP3 download plans that are available on the internet.
And thank you, Drew. That's a little bit of what's going on in our media environment. And you can share the Media Geek Radio Show all you like. It's available for download at our media at our website, www.mediageek.org, in the MP3, and open source, Ogg Vorbis format. Burn it, share it, play it to your friends. It's all fine with us.
As long as you're not making any money, right?
As long as you're not making any money. If you're making some money, we want to see some of it. Because we're not making any right now.
Nope.
Coming up in just a moment, we're going to hear about people making their own transmitters as part of a project in Minneapolis called Radio Revolt. Do stay tuned.
Yeah!
That's some Killing Joke. The song is called Another Bloody Election. That's Drew's pick, by the way. So September 29th and 30th was a conference called Radio Access Democracy, held at the Minneapolis College of Art and Design and sponsored by the Walker Art Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And it was the culmination to a several-month-long project called Radio Revolt, wherein the art center encouraged people to come in and build little low-wattage transmitters and to put them into various objects as art, but also to use them to play art, to create art through radio. It was a really cool conference, and during that, one of the highlights for me was to see Tetsuo Kogawa, who is the real spiritual forefather of the micropower FM movement in the United States. He's a Japanese scholar of communications at Tokyo University, and he started a movement in Japan during the 1970s called Mini FM. And it was because he discovered in Japan that radio regulations did not cover stations that broadcast below a certain power threshold. And in Japan during the 1970s, the airwaves are completely dominated by government broadcasters. There's very little diversity on the FM dial, very few stations to choose from, and he saw an opportunity to bring more community voices. He also hoped it would help to reinvigorate the student movements, which had been vigorous in the 1960s and early 70s as they had been around much of the world, but had been really in decline during the late 70s, partially due to government efforts of suppression. And he hoped also to use radio as a technology to bring people together, to put on radio parties, radio picnics, and other things. And he thought by using low-wattage transmitters, it forced it to be a very local phenomenon, to be around, you know, very small amounts of area, and might even draw people to the transmitter itself. And so he gave the keynote talk and went over a lot of this history. And then on Saturday, they had the final a workshop for building transmitters, and I was able to talk to some of the people who are building transmitters. And that evening, there was a performance called Radio 4x4, where four collage and sort of ambient noise artists came together to perform, and they performed into low-wattage transmitters. And so instead of hearing them perform out of speakers, you heard them perform out of radios, which are placed all around a large room. So as you walked around the room, you got a sort of a different mix and different perspective on the sounds they were making, and that's sort of some indication of the type of artistic use to radio that the Walker Art Center wanted to pursue. And I spoke along with John Anderson of DIYmedia.net on two panels about what was going on at the FCC regarding radio regulation, and also a larger panel on how to make DIY and alternative media. What we're going to hear right now is some interviews with people who are making transmitters themselves and putting them into various objects, interspersed with some of the audio from the Radio 4x4 performance. So we can go to that audio right now.
My name is Cameron, and I am from Northfield, Minnesota, Carleton College. Mm-hmm. And I am the station manager of KRLX 88.1 FM there.
But you're also building your own low-power transmitter.
Yes. I can see how some people may see that as somehow a conflict of interest. I am putting my transmitter in an iPod iPod packaging. And the reason for that is because sort of the central irony that we're encountering now in the digital age is on-demand, instant-on access to, one, information, music, what have you. Essentially, the irony behind it is that radio is the antithesis of the iPod, I feel, and that it is delivered as opposed to on-demand. However, an iPod cannot deliver the same content that you can get from an independent media source or independent radio, whatever it may be.
So what are you going to broadcast?
I haven't quite decided that yet. I may rebroadcast indie media radio sources off the internet. Either that, or I'm also a DJ. I may broadcast my own mixes. But the exact purpose is yet to be determined.
God is not just some floating spirit going through space, and anybody can sort of plug in and...
Well, my transmitter is a hard-won enterprise because I had to battle my wife this morning for her very favorite old cigar box. She keeps jewelry in it, and I unceremoniously dumped the jewelry into a white kitchen bowl and took off with her box. So I have an absolutely beautiful kind of box here.
And why a cigar box?
Well, you know, I just grabbed something interesting today. Actually, I'm going to convert it into something more conceptually interesting when I get home, but this is a nice ride home for it.
And what will you broadcast?
I'm not entirely sure. I think I'm going to start a little home broadcasting, and then I think I'm going to do some broadcasting in the building that I am, and I'm certainly interested in buying a lot more of these and encouraging students to do some kind of a conceptual radio project with them.
My name is Marcus Robinson. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri.
And so you're busy building a transmitter here. And what do you?
It's already built, but yeah, I'm right now. I'm in the process of mounting it into a Glad container.
And that should do very well.
Highly technical process.
Highly technical. And what do you plan to do with your transmitter?
I plan to transmit stuff.
Like what? Anything?
Probably as much as I can to annoy my wife and. Run her out of the house or whatever I can, yeah.
What about your neighbors? You think they'll be able to hear it?
Yeah, they'll probably hear it, too. I'll make sure I have to sneak in and tune their radios to 97.7 and make sure they get some of my wonderful insight on the current events of the world.
Oh, so you plan on getting on air and speaking?
My way of sharing my intelligence with everyone.
Yeah, I think everybody would benefit from it, myself, too.
Hey, what do you think? Are you his wife? No comment. Okay, so not everyone agrees with you, apparently.
Very few agree with me. That's the problem. That's why I have to force feed them.
So that was a little bit of sound from the Radio 4x4 performance held as part of the Radio Access Democracy Conference at the Minneapolis College of Art and Design on September 29th and 30th, and interspersed were some interviews with people making actual transmitters and embedding them in various objects as part of the Radio Revolt workshop held there. And you can get more pictures of some of the transmitters. You can see what this actually looked like and read a little bit more about what went on there at the Media Geek website, www.mediageek.org. And now we're going to take a look a little bit at what this just very recent election might have in store for us who care about media issues. Now, since it really doesn't represent a sea change, you know, we're retaining the Bush administration, and then there's a slight gain by the Republicans in Congress, I don't think we can really expect to see a sea change in how media issues are going to be pursued, though I do think that we are going to see a continued push for deregulation, although it'll take various different forms. And so I think one of the first places that people think about media regulation, of course, is the Federal Communications Commission. The majority will stay Republican. The majority is always the same party as the executive. And these they are appointed by the executive and approved by Congress. Commissioner Adelstein, who is a Democrat, is a very, very outspoken opponent of media consolidation. He's been very outspoken in favor of low-power FM and issues like media reform, and he is not likely to be renominated. In fact, his term has expired. And primarily, he will not be renominated because his primary supporter was Senator Tom Daschle of South Dakota, the former minority leader in the Senate who did not get reelected. Adelstein used to work as an aide to Daschle. A possible Democratic replacement for him is Greg Rothschild, senior Democratic counsel in the House Commerce Committee, and an aide to Representative John Dingell. Probably a bit more of a policy wonk, a little bit more mainstream and staid than Jonathan Adelstein turned out to be. Now, if Chairman Powell decides to leave and not serve another term as chairman, the favorite to succeed him is Kevin Martin, although he is less popular with Republicans for having sided with Commission Democrats on telecom regulation, and his insistence that the Media Ownership Diversity Index apply only to newspaper broadcast cross-ownership, whereas Chairman Powell would like this diversity index to sort of take into account all types of media, including internet and presumably billboards and all other sorts of things that he'd like to throw under that umbrella. He's also very much a policy wonk, very mainstream, and he does fall into the deregulation end of things. The term of Republican Commissioner Kathleen Abernathy expires at the end of 2005. It's believed that she is ready to leave. She is not particularly distinguished on the commission, and she largely follows in lockstep with Commissioner Powell. A possible replacement for her is former Texas Public Utility Commissioner Rebecca Klein, who also served as policy director of general government for Bush when he was governor of Texas. So really an old Texas crony of Bush. She might also be up if Chairman Powell decides to leave and Kevin Martin takes over the chairship. Other possible Republican nominees include National Telecommunications and Information Administration Director Michael Gallagher, William Bailey, Chief Telecom Advisor to Senator John McCain, and FCC Chief of Staff Brian Tremont. And of those, probably William Bailey is the most exceptional one with regard to having a grasp on issues, and Senator McCain has probably been one of the more moderate Republican voices with regard to telecom and media issues in the recent past. With regard to Congress, again, we still have Republican control. In fact, they have a little bit better control, so it means there's very little traction for media reform issues or the expansion of low-power FM. The FCC sent off a report to Congress, mandated by Congress, that said it's possible for more stations to be put onto the dial. It seems as though there's not a lot of support for that in Congress. It did go to the Senate Commerce Committee, but has gone nowhere else after that. Senator John McCain is leaving the chairship of the Senate Commerce Committee, and that's due to Senate tenure rules. There's term limits on being a chair. Ted Stevens of Alaska is expected to succeed him. He's likely to stress rural telecom service issues, being from Alaska, and probably will not be a strong advocate for media reform issues like McCain has been. Representative Joe Barton is expected to retain his chairmanship of the Energy and Commerce Committee. He's a Republican from Texas. Barton has called for revamping the Telecommunications Act of 1996, saying that a new law was needed to take into account the convergence of voice, video, and data over the Internet and to accommodate strains in the subsidy program to keep local phone service affordable in rural America. Probably, though, when he says revamping the Telecommunications Act of 1996, he's probably not talking about reform. Especially not reform in order to undo much of the industry consolidation in radio that has happened as a result of that act. And of course, in the House, I don't think we're going to see much traction for media reform issues, but it hasn't had traction so far. Right. Dennis Hastert from Illinois is the Speaker of the House, and he lets none of that get to the floor. So I think we're going to see pretty much very little motion on any media reform issue. If we see any motion, it's going to be in the courts. But with a Republican president in Congress, the FCC may feel more emboldened to go ahead and challenge the Court of Appeals decision against its loosened media ownership rules. Remember, they set down new rules, and then this year those rules were struck down by the appeals court, the Third Circuit, which sent it back to the FCC, says you need to rewrite them. They may feel with greater congressional and presidential support that they can go and challenge it to the Supreme Court.
Do you think that that's in their interest to do that?
In the FCC's interest to do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it depends on what you see the FCC's interest as.
Right.
If the FCC's interest is in pleasing well-connected members of Congress and the president, mm-hmm. who all have...
Who appointed them.
who appointed them, who get a lot of money from the communications industry and the National Association of Broadcasters, then it probably is in their interest.
Mm-hmm.
If they're taking more seriously their mandate to act in the public interest, that may not be so. And it's going to see what the particular mix of commissioners is on the commission.
Well, moving to the Supreme Court, though, could bring the case into a more high-profile debate and actually work to their disadvantage when it comes... I mean...
It depends on what the balance of the Supreme Court is.
Right.
Right mm-hmm. now, the balance of the Supreme Court is three to four very conservative justices, five or so, who are less conservative, which mm-hmm. and with regard to telecom issues and media issues, they tend to fall fairly centrist in their decisions right now. So it's really kind of a crapshoot.
Right.
But there's at least a slight chance, a slightly better chance that the current court would come out in support of the Third Circuit ruling or may make certain modifications to it. But that's mm-hmm. not to be guaranteed. And again, Chief Justice Rehnquist may decide to step down. He's in ill health.
Yes.
We may see some real changes in Supreme Court now. We managed to avoid any changes during the previous 4 years of Bush, but we may not be able to see that continue during the next 4 years. And so that's a lot of things in flux. It mm-hmm. seems though the winds, mm-hmm. at least with regard to the people in power, are much more pro-industry. However, what I can say on the flip side is that the media reform movement has a lot greater and stronger legs than it did 4 years ago. And that's a combination. It's hard to predict because individual congresspeople are often responsive to their constituencies and will often can be coached to take lines that are a little bit different than their funders would like, since mm-hmm. ticking mm-hmm. off the people at home is not always such a great strategy. But, we're looking at least the status quo, I think, as we go forward, which I think is what we see, and maybe a little bit more pro-industry as we go into things.
That's a bummer.
It's a bummer, but you know what? It helps to keep the fire going in our belly, doesn't it?
That's right. Well, I'm sure we'll be covering this issue continuously, and we'll be letting you know what media activists are devising in order to bring more grassroots media to the public of the United States.
That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. We'll be back in 1 week with more news and views on our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek on the web at www.mediageek.org. There you can read the Media Geek blog for news that can't fit onto the show, as well as download archive episodes of the program in MP3 in the open-source Ogg Vorbis format. If you have any comments about the program, please send them to paul@mediageek.org. I'm host and executive producer Paul Riesmandel. Our producer is Drew Tirico. Media Geek is produced live at community radio station WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Some pre-production happens at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. Media Geek is also heard on KRFP, Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho, and on KQRP in Salida, California. And Media Geek is free to broadcast on your local non-commercial station, too. To inquire, please send email to paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.